Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.
Welcome back. Mitch Melnick with you. Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo as well. David Trentadue helping us out. When we last spoke to Pierre McGuire of ESPN.com and TSN Hockey Insider, he was in Saskatoon.
People are just so shocked that, you know, he's made this incredible health recovery and felt well enough to travel for 12 hours yesterday with some of the plane issues they had. And at the age of 86 and you know, almost succumbing 2 months ago, here he is for this incredible event here tonight in Saskatoon. It's absolutely unreal.
Pierre LeBrun on site for Gordie Howe, Mark Howe, Marty Howe, Dr. Murray Howe, Bobby Hull, Brett Hull, Wayne Gretzky. So you left us with that, and then I went to Boston for the weekend. Pierre, how you doing?
I'm all right. So we both had snowstorms. I had one in Saskatoon, and you had one in Boston. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what they call a snowstorm, but we Canadians know it's really not a snowstorm.
Well, let me tell you, the one we had in Saskatoon was pretty real.
That was a blizzard then.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they didn't have a blizzard in Boston. It's just they've had so much snow, they can't get rid of it. They don't have the vehicles to properly get rid of the snow that's accumulated. So that's a bigger problem than the actual snowfall.
Right.
So I was kind of chuckling as Boston downtown core was paralyzed on Sunday and Monday. It was like, this is nothing. It's waiting for them to call in the National Guard at some point.
Hey, Toronto. Come on now.
So how
that was 20 years ago?
What did we miss? And we'll get to today in the NHL and over the weekend and what might happen. But what was that night like that you were at?
I mean, it really was unreal, Mitch. I doubt that I did it justice in my piece, and you know, Scott Burnside was there as well, and a few other colleagues, but it was so hard to completely do it justice because it was such an emotionally charged night, which also contained a lot of laughter. Kelly Chase did an unbelievable job emceeing it, and you know, Dennis Hall, when he took over, oh my gosh, I mean, you barely sit on your seat. He's so funny, as you know.
Yeah.
But so many emotional moments. I mean, Bobby Hall grabbing, looking at Gordie Howe and saying, you know, you're my inspiration. I mean, geez, A lot of blue-collar folks in that auditorium in Saskatoon with watery eyes at that point. And of course, Wayne Gretzky capping the evening with words that won't soon be forgotten about he'll always be the greatest. I mean, that was and it wasn't prepared. I mean, I asked Wayne afterwards, you know, were those words that you thought about during the day that you were going to say? And he goes, no, it came straight from the heart. Right at that moment, and it was a pretty good way to sort of cap it all.
Well, you know that we deal with younger people who believe that history started when they were born, or when the internet was born, and since there is no advanced stat to measure what Gordie Howe did in the National Hockey League, I trust people who were there with their eyes, and I'll never forget what Red Story told me, and others many, many times. The greatest goal scorer he ever saw was Rocket Richard. The best player from the blue line in that he ever saw was Rocket Richard. The best all-around player he ever saw was Gordie Howe.
Yeah, I was going to say the debate probably, and again, I'm too young myself, but between Rocket Richard and Gordie Howe, I think is where your debate starts for sure. And then, you know, I mean, listen, Wayne Gretzky's a pretty humble guy. He's not going to throw himself in there, but, you know, Bobby Orr and Wayne Gretzky, and then you start to have yourself the debate right there, I think.
All right, so let's go. Let's go. For the next 15 minutes, let's determine who the greatest NHL player was. The best player I saw, because I didn't see Gordie Howe in his prime. I saw him. I didn't see Rocket play at all. Best player I ever saw was Bobby Orr.
Yeah. I would go with Gretzky because I think that one of the things that also made him great is how healthy he stayed all those years. I mean, you know, I've often heard people say, was Mario Lemieux the most talented player ever? But you can't say he was the greatest ever because he missed big stretches of time. I think what's amazing about Bobby Orr, who clearly at the very least is the greatest defenseman ever, if not the greatest player ever, as you say, Mitch, is that he changed the way the game was played quite dramatically. And I think that's part of your greatness when you have that kind of impact during your era. And the game was never the same after Bobby Orr in terms of the way he played it at both ends. And that was for, you know, and that was a positive thing.
So who would you say? You'd say Ovechkin? Mitch Gallo?
No, I'd go with I'd go with Mario.
Yeah,
Mario would be my number one. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, Rod's grimacing.
Gretzky. The perfect Gretzky quote for me is, "I skate to where the puck is going to be, and not to where the puck is." And when I think Gretzky, I think that sense of anticipation that is unrivaled.
And Mario himself has always said, as talented as he was, he didn't work as hard as he realized he had to. He wasn't in as great a shape as he when he was younger. And it was hanging around with Gretzky at the Canada Cup that he learned so much about what it takes to take your game to the next level. Right? Right, Pierre?
Yeah, that was definitely a big part of Mario's burgeoning as a superstar, was that tournament and Gretzky's influence on him. There's no question. To me, Gretzky's the greatest. But again, I'm a victim of my own, you know, era and time, born in 72. You know, that's, to me, I mean, just the consistency in terms of the production that he put up and the moments in the playoffs where he played some of his greatest hockey as well. It's just pretty hard to match.
Okay. Fast forward to 2015. When we last spoke also, we were asking you about Marc Bergevin, the Montreal Canadiens. I think you said something along the lines as he's doing what he probably was doing a year ago, and that is working the phones an awful lot trying to improve his hockey club.
Correct. Yeah, no, that's and certainly the only way I know that is when I speak with other teams that his name comes up, and I think he's just doing his due diligence. Let's put it this way: if he had zeroed in on a specific target, I don't know who it is, and he's doing a great job of hiding it because you're not seeing it anywhere. I think it's more along the lines right now, 3 weeks out, of making sure he knows exactly what's going on a lot of files, so that if he has a chance, he knows exactly what's entailed. He can make a quick decision. But I just don't have the sense right now that he's in any particular target.
I think I may have asked you, but since we're like 52 games into the season now, why you think there is this belief in Montreal especially that as incredibly consistent and successful as they have been this season, coming off an Eastern Conference final appearance a year ago, why there are people who are still not convinced that this is among the better teams in the National Hockey League. I jokingly refer to their upcoming collapse when they hit the West Coast, when the trade deadline is March the 2nd. They're going to be in San Jose. And they could lose all three games out there. I don't care. They're still they are who they are here, 52 games into the season. Why more fans around here in their own backyard don't seem to embrace them?
Well, I think there's two reasons why people haven't elevated them into the elite group. One is that the advanced stats community is definitely down on Montreal. You know, some of the puck possession numbers don't show them to be in the same group as some of the elite teams. So that's definitely a knock. In other words, a lot of the advanced stats community says it's a Carey Price show.
Yeah, but they have Boston ahead of Montreal in that department, and Montreal's a better team than Boston, period.
Right. So, and by the way, when do we start having to apologize for having one of the best goalies in the world? I mean that's like saying, you know, New England's not New England if it wasn't for Tom Brady.
Right, it's ridiculous.
Well,
it's a ridiculous, yeah.
You know, if I'm going to have one player who's going to be top three in the world at his position, I want it to be my goalie any day of the week. In any case, I won't start. But I think the other part of the perception as to why they haven't been, you know, maybe league-wide presented as being up there as, you know, with the top four or five teams is I think the organization itself has tried to manage expectations and minimize their own aspirations. And I think it's smart because I think what it's done and really under Marc Bergevin and Michel Therrien from day one, since they came in a few years ago, they have done that. To try, I think, and control the most passionate, the hopes of the most passionate market in the world, and to some degree, I think they've had some success by doing that. I mean, if you'll never catch Michel Therrien or Marc Bergevin on camera talk about their team belonging in the same league as X. I mean, it's always about oof, the Rangers are they must be the best team in the East, and you know we're just hoping long term to make the right decisions here and have some sustainability in what we're doing. But you won't catch them, either one, ever talking about, you know, we're going for the cup this year. Those are just not words that are going to come out of their mouth.
That's very perceptive. We've heard anybody who follows, which means most people listening who are ardent Canadiens fans, whether it's the post-game pressers or the pre-game look-aheads, it's always Michel Therrien talking about how good his opponent is. And Marc Bergevin specifically, when he sat down with us, whenever that was at Westmount Moving, and he said, who would be favored? He asked me. I said, who would be favored? The Canadiens or the Bruins right now? And he expected me to say Boston, but I said, you guys, you've already beaten the Bruins. I think you're a better team than Boston. He didn't want to hear that.
No.
He didn't want. And I asked him off the air briefly before he had to speak publicly, and it's pretty much what you're talking about is they've done it. They're on. It's like a talking point with them.
And I think it's smart. I mean, I think you have a very passionate market there in Montreal where people get excited because, I mean, I don't know who loves the sport more than folks in your town. And I think, I think the sense is let's not put the bar in terms of what we truly feel we could do at a point where we can't measure up to it. I mean, that's PR 101.
Finishing up with Pierre Lebrun of ESPN.com and TSN Hockey Insider with us every Tuesday and Thursday after 6 on Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690. Habs and Flyers tonight, so this is like a last gasp. I don't think anybody realistically thinks that Boston and New York will slip out and the Flyers will somehow get in. But without Steve Mason, it's bleak. It's already pretty bleak. So will the Flyers be active, in your opinion, at the deadline? Will they move people out? What do you think?
Not nearly as active as, I mean, I do think they'll make a couple moves, but I don't think they'll be nearly as active as they plan to be as they hope to be, I would say, in the off season. I mean, they have to revamp their blue line now. They do have kids coming. Sam Morin comes to mind. There are prospects coming, but they have got to become a better defensive team. You know, I mean, they have two of the top five scorers in the league, but yet probably don't even produce as much offense as they could team-wide because they spend too much time in their zone. I mean, look for that tonight when you're watching the Habs-Flyers game, but they really struggle in transition at times, and a lot of it starts with their issues on the blue line. So I think that'll be an area of emphasis, probably even more so in June than now, but that's where the focus and the work has to be for Philadelphia, is to be a quicker team and a more talented team on the back end.
And who are the Rangers looking at?
Sorry, trade-wise?
Yeah.
The Rangers would love to pick up a bottom six forward that can help them in the face-off department and have a great 200-foot game. Mike Santarelli is a guy the Rangers have scouted and have interest in. The Leafs pending UFA. But they also have a couple other guys on their list, I'm told. They'd love to add a bottom six guy. I think they feel a little young there, a little thin there. The other thing that they're looking at, and I just found this out today, so it's a little fresh, but the Rangers are scouring the market looking for a backup goalie to back up their backup, you know, to play behind Cam Talbot. Right now they have a 20-year-old kid, Mackenzie Scarpas, who's backing up Cam Talbot, and Lundqvist, as we know, has gone a month. So they're a little thin there in case something happens to Talbot, who they really like. They think Talbot can handle this, but what if something happens to him now? So they're looking around the league now looking for another veteran backup to be insurance to Cam Talbot.
So were you stuck in Saskatoon, or did you make it out on time?
No, amazingly, and my flight was only a half hour delayed on Saturday, but let me tell you, especially on the Friday when the event took place, now we had a very short walk from our hotel, and everyone stayed in the same hotel right across the auditorium where the Kinsmen dinner took place, but literally, the storm was coming in sideways. I'm glad I wasn't a thinner version of myself from 20 years ago. I might have been taken into the storm. Yeah, it was a good old prairie storm, let me tell you.
Like the Wizard of Oz, like the
yeah,
Dorothy flying through the air. Thanks, Pierre. Welcome back. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
Okay, brother. See you later.
Yep.
Melnick in the afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.